Well, hello to you on this date, the 27th of May, 2021. In the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. You know, the question that constantly comes up is, can you find a woman that's really gonna love a man the way she's supposed to? The late, great Aretha Franklin made a record concerning that, and she says she ain't never loved a man the way that she loved this one. Aretha! Aretha Franklin, thank you for joining me on today's webcast. You know, I became reacquainted with an old friend. He's not old. He's far younger than I am. But Ringo for life, Ringo TV, YouTube channel. And I knew Ringo way back in 2006. And I reacquainted myself with his work. And his studio is something to really behold. Ringo, you're doing a great job, and keep on doing it. And I thought about playing this number by Aretha because Ringo keeps it real. I met Ringo when he was a member of a Heretics church, Creflo Dollar. And Ringo figured out that it was all a lie, that the people were being taken on the Fruit Loop Trail, and Ringo began to communicate about that to the people that he knew. And they turned against Ringo and just tried to ostracize him and destroy him. And he is still doing on his YouTube network exactly what I've always done on mine in such a way. I love his style. I love him proving his point. And he knows he will never have a lot of friends because of what he does. And this is what I've discovered. and it was real nice. I have on my YouTube page, when I'm talking about addressing Ringo for Life, and I have over 5,000 hits on that little clip that I put up. I think it was back in something like 2010, something like that. I have over 5,000 hits on it where people were tuning in to hear what I had to say about Ringo, you know, as a pastor. And that blesses my heart that people can go to my YouTube page and listen to some of my old work and gain something from that. But I got to share with you what I've been going through here in my life for the past few days and tell you about a wonderful event that happened right in front of me in FaceTime here in my home. You know, I'm having my home painted, and the man that's going to paint it, he said, oh, it'll be painted by Saturday. He said he's going to prime it on tomorrow, and he's going to paint it on Saturday. And my home, and I'm working on my garden to plant my greens and my vegetables and things like that. And with the new rock front lawn in the front, and I walked my dog this morning and picked up a few more ideas about plants in my rock foray in the front lawn that I want to plant, because some of these cactus plants become very huge. You just have to cut the points off of them, and so that nobody will get injured if their kid walks down the street. And I'm willing to do that. But I've just been looking at some wonderful examples of what my neighbors are doing to their lawn, and it prompted me to look at mine again. Now, I'm 77. Check it out. I'm 77. I'm an OG, if you want to call me that. I'm an old guy. And at 77, I'm also looking to do this. I'm cleaning my house out. You guys know I used to have a lot of young men come by here and try to help these guys and everything. I'm going to do that, but it's going to be on a completely different level. It's going to be more of a counseling kind of thing, more of a fellowship where men, Hispanic and Black, can come together and sit down at a fire log and just have a nice evening to communicate and to enjoy one another and not, you know, want to go to war with each other. You know, kind of bring that perfect peace that I preached about in the Bible all those years into fruition. Bring it to pass. Make it happen. Make the peace take place. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with you. But there's going to be some moral restrictions also put on there. I'm going to share with these young men how to treat women, because I'm telling you, our young women are just as lost as the young men are, just totally in oblivion when it comes to taking care of their lives. They seemingly don't have any shame with how they live. Either their parents never taught them, they never had parents, or they don't think about it. I was here in my home yesterday, and a young Hispanic man, I got to tell you about this. You know, these salesmen come to the door there, and my house is being prepared to be painted. But this young Hispanic man came, and, you know, he wanted to advertise the fact that that somebody can come in and set a price to put a new roof on the house for free. Well, I already had one person check out the roof this week, and he told me that I don't have any leaks coming in my house. He went up in the attic. So the other guy, when he comes out, I'm just going to say, you can take the square footage of the house and everything and tell me how much would it cost for you to put a, you know, a roofing, because I'm not going to get that thing ripped down to the wood. I don't need that. But anyhow, the young man came by, and I had a visitor in the house. My buddy Reggie came by to visit me, and Reggie's about 53. And we were talking, And this young man began to talk with me, and which is my way, I will never forbid talking and encouraging a young man, African-American and Latina. There's a lot of young Hispanic men that want to work, that want to do something, that wants to find and make a decent life for themselves. And he caught me on a day, because yesterday I got up and I wasn't feeling good about my life. I was thinking about all this money that I'm spending. All my retirement money is going to paint my house. You know, the retirement that I got from teaching school. I was going to go on a sea cruise or do something like that. But then I didn't want to do that. I said, why should I waste my money doing that? Excuse me, I'm trying to get a little bit of a something to drink cool. Ah, good, I got it. All right. And so I said, what I'm going to do, I looked up some nice, fresh colors. Green, I'm going to paint the house green and have it trimmed in a dark gray, because I want it to look like a garden. I want my house to look like an eggplant, so to say, healthy, you know? Because when I'm trying to put it in words for you, when I have the brothers come by to visit me, the price for the counseling is very easy. It's a nice bottle of red wine. And we'll always have a glass of wine. We'll share a glass of wine, and we'll talk. I'll counsel them, just like I did when I was a pastor. But I will not use the Bible verses. I will use the precepts that I taught in the Bible without preaching to them, because I don't want to run them off with the fear of some crazy evangelical type of bull crap. I want to present the idea that the patriarchal, and I did that while I was speaking with that young man. I asked him, did he have a father? And the young man began to tell me, he said, yes, but he hasn't seen him in years. And I said, if I may ask, why? Why haven't you seen your father? Or why don't you correspond with your father? And the young man told me, because his father beat him and beat his mother. So he grew up in an abusive kind of a thing. But this is what got me. Because when I'm speaking to men, it's what I did when I was pastoring. It's why I had more men in the church that I pastored than women. I loved the people as they opened up and spoke freely about their lives to me. And when that took place, the young man told me, he said, I am so glad I came to this house. He said, I was going to pass this house up, because he saw them doing work on the house already. And he said that something told him to knock on the door. And when I came to the door, he said, and you began to speak with me, he said, the depression that I had this morning when I got up all disappeared. He said, I felt a warmness in me as I looked at you and you looked at me and you started to pour yourself into me, telling me about your history, about what you accomplished as a young man and how you did it and how you were married and how your daughters never got a ticket and never got in trouble and how. And it reminded me, when he was telling me that, in the New Testament scripture, when some of the disciples were saying, did not our hearts burn within us as Jesus spoke with us by the way. Well, that's exactly what this man experienced, and I know how to do it. I've been doing it my whole life. And I said to God yesterday morning, before this young man came to my door, that I was tired and that I'm just going to get the house fixed up and that he can kill me because I'm done with it. I'm just so devastated by what I hear and see on the news, the hatred that is in people's hearts that they have for each other has taken me off of the map. But when and after I spoke with this young man, a certain encouragement came in me. Now, let me share with you. This morning I woke up, had the same amount of hours of sleep, but because I've made a decision to stop fooling with people completely, that is not thinking about positively moving ahead and making a gesture for positivity in their lives, I have to cut those individuals off out of my life completely. Completely. Now, I have a Bible verse for that because Jesus was telling his disciples as they went from town to town, and he told them, he said, now, if you go into a place and they do not receive what you're saying, he said, shake the dust off your feet. You know what that meant? You know what that means. You know exactly what that means. That means don't have a damn thing to do with them. Leave them in the dilemma that they're in. And you know what that does? That opens the door for God now to come and to execute divine judgment based upon what the definition of sin is. Listen to me. St. Origen, about 250 AD, because theologues, some 150, 200 years after Christ died, was trying to define, well, what is it when we do wrong? What is it to do wrong? Does government dictate to us what sin is, what wrong is? And everybody came up with their definitions and opinions. If you would ask someone today, what is it when I sin? What is it when I do something wrong? What is it? Well, it's when you miss the mark. Well, what mark? Who set the mark? Who set the plumb line? I recall when I had joined the church at 23, I didn't know what a plumb line was. My pastor would invite us out to our Tuesday night Bible studies, and he would say, you know, when a man's going to build a house, and he wanted to make sure that the house was level, so he had to get a plumb line. It was a stick and a string, and you got to the top of it, and if it didn't line up perpendicularly right next to it, the plumb line would let you know if the house was crooked. And the pastor used that illustration to tell us that is exactly what God does when he measures us by the standards that he has for us. Man, what a wonderful concept. Because when you think about that concept in its reality, all of us are measured in God's particular plumb line. He has it all measured. All dictated out there for us. And what I want to do in my home, see, everybody's talking about, old people, what do you do? Old people, you just going to set up at home and look at TV and wait to die? Oh, hell no. No. I want to do what God set in motion for me to do. And he did not set me in motion to do what he set you in motion to do. And until I leave the planet, I must do that. And what my attempt is to have one theme for the rest of my life, Oh, I hope my friend Dean Gocher is listening to me. Dean, if you ever listen to this webcast, you don't know how much your website, Authority Research, has influenced me. Because I believe in patriarchy. I believe that the father is the authority. Listen to me. When I look at the shipwreck conditions of my community, I'm in this house all by myself. I go to the internet every day. You know what? I've been, what, 4 or 5 days before I do a webcast because I'm looking at the news. I'm listening to explanations. People shot to death in San Jose. Why did that crazy white man shoot up the... Why did he make the other people suffer in their lives for his being a loser? And these people are coming out of the woodwork now. I talk with them all the time. I won't tell you who, I'm speaking currently with a man, and the man keeps telling me how much he's armed up. Oh, I got a gun over here, but I don't be stockpiling weaponry and stuff like that. What are you trying to do, fight a war with your neighbors? Some people are. Some people cannot deal with where life has them. That's why I'm fixing up my house. Because as the men sat around the fire log, as the men walked back there in the garden with me and look at the various things that I planted, as they eat some of the food from the salad that grows in the garden, as they feel better, as they keep their bodies and their minds healthier, as they see what I'm trying to do in the lives of young black and Latina men in the community. Let me tell you what happened today. I'm walking my dog, you know? And gentrification is moving in this entire neighborhood. This was all black and then all Latina. Now the whites are moving back in. I'm walking my dog Harcourt. I live basically on 64th and Harcourt. I walk all the way to 60th Street. Looking at the plant formations out there, you know, and I've always been taught to be a very hospitable guy. You know, I speak to my neighbors, and there was this white lady. She looked older, and she could have been about 60 years old. And she was walking, and I had to pass her with my dog, and I said, "Good morning," you know, in a chipper voice that I use. You know, that white woman didn't even respond back to me. She's moving in my neighborhood with an attitude. You know what? White privilege. See? White privilege. I was always taught to be hospitable to everyone, to treat everybody with the same amount of respect. Don't be rude. And I said, "Good morning." She looked dead at me and looked away like I was a piece of shit. And you know what I almost said? I almost said, "Now I see the dangers of gentrification. People like you move in and the neighborhood goes to shit." I didn't say anything, but that's what I thought. See, people don't know how to be hospitable anymore because they've ridden God out of everything. And you know, it's cheaper to buy homes over here in what used to be called South Central. Most of the people that moved in are pretty good neighbors. But some of these other people, you got some diehard rednecks moving back in the hood. So I'm kind of glad we still got gang affiliation over here. I remember in the Bible, there was a name of a gang member in the Hebrew culture. What was his name? His name was, let me see if I can remember that name. I can't, but it was one Sunday I was preaching a sermon in my church, and I invite it because I live in the neighborhood of the Rolling 60 Crips, the Rolling 60s Crips. So I invited the young men to come out to the church that I pastored on Jefferson and Central on Sunday morning because I was preaching to the youth. And about five or six of them got in their car and came down. And it was Jeffna, that's right. The name of the gang member was Jeffna. Jeffna was a Hebrew, and he ran with his boys. And the elders of Israel didn't want to have anything to do with Jeffna because all them boys that ran with Jeffna, mothers didn't marry, their fathers broke up, and they were ostracized in the community. So when the foreign enemy came to Israel to do them harm, and they were going to wipe them out, the elders of Israel went to Jeffna and said, "We need you to get your street hoods to help defend us from our enemies that's trying to come in and take our land." It reminds me of what happened in Palestine a couple of weeks ago, and I saw how the white Israel responded. Because at that time, when you look at Jeffna and the Israelites, they weren't looking like the European Jews that are mainly in Israel today. And you need to know that. You need to know that. If you want to find out what those Jews really look like, they look more like Ethiopians. And pray for the pray for Ethiopia, because they're going through tremendous suffering over there now. Armies are attacking the people. The people are homeless, foodless, and it's a shame. The UN is gutless, can't do anything. Nobody knows what to do. My God is able. God is able. And there will be retribution for this insane behavior that is going on amongst us human beings. Excuse me. I got to drink some of this stuff. It's called bubbly sparkling water. Please don't tell me there's something wrong with that, because it tastes so good. And I don't want to stop drinking it. So, back to the brass tack. I walk back home and I'm looking at the various plants and flowers and everything and what my neighbors are doing to their homes. And guess what? A lot of older people in these homes, because I knew some of these people, they passed away, and their children is taking over the home. And these are black people. And they're taking the insurance money in the house and really fixing the homes up. Very nice. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm praying that God might give me. Oh, and please pray for Karen Finister. Karen, God bless Karen Finister. Karen Finister was, I used to teach Karen when she was a teenager in Sunday school. Karen Finister is one of the daughters of Reverend Louis Finister. Louis Finister, and that name is very familiar because the Finister boys, Dimitri, Darrell, and Louis Jr., my goodness, I taught all these men when they were young teenagers in my Sunday school class. Well, now, of course, they're grown, and they have children of their own. Some of them are grandparents, if you can believe that. Well, she on Facebook said, "Please pray for me." She's going in for chemo treatment because her mother died of cancer, Ophelia Finister. And, you know, it's hereditary. And so offer up prayers for Karen. And Karen, if you're listening to this, you know what? Only what you can do for God is going to last. You offer up those timbers of prayer for yourself. See, other people's prayer for you is not going to benefit as much as you knowing what the will of God is for your life And then, like I had to do yesterday, let God know that I'm still yet willing to benefit his cause by doing some things that's going to bring some praise to his glory and not my own. One person was telling me that I should get my house fixed up, and then he told me to put a bathroom and a sink in the back, and he says, you can make this much money every month. What am I going to do with all that money? Can't do nothing with all that money. I said, man, I don't need all that money. And that's what a lot of people are doing. They're buying homes and so that they can make some money, so that they can live comfortably and charge somebody else an arm and a leg. I never charged any of those young men that I helped over the years a penny of rent. Never charged them. And I got one on the other side of the world doing a work that only he can do, because I didn't charge him anything as he grew into manhood and attempted to discover who he was and what he was going to do. If your life is not like that, then you're living a wasted life. And right, you hear that? That's my workman dragging that ladder and everything, because he's filling in all those little holes and gaps in the wall, because they're going to paint my house and it's going to be something beautiful for you to behold. Oh, I can't hardly wait. I've been talking 31 minutes. What's the point? Do you see what I'm aiming at? And then what I'd like to do is I'd like to leave this for you to think about. What legacy are you leaving when you die, when you leave behind? What legacy are you leaving? I know a lot of preachers that died. I know. I remember the churches here in Los Angeles, and they're dead, and I'm looking at the legacy that they... Oh, my God, please. It's important that if the legacy that we are leaving behind does not touch the things of God in a way that can make it better for other people to live and to be and to have their being, then we've wasted a life. We've wasted a life. I recall once I was speaking with someone in my family, and they told me they just drunk and partied and lived a reckless life. I was speaking to that young Hispanic man yesterday, and he was telling me about his drinking. He says he drinks more now because he can't figure out how he's going to make it and how he's going to, make it through this life. A lot of the millennials are like that, and he's in that age group. And I said, well, no, you want to change that behavior now and start filling that empty place in with those things that can fill your life with positivity and give you a reason to move progressively forward. That's when he told me, oh, my God, man, my heart was beating fast. I want more and more of that talk. He said, nobody talks to me like that. Nobody. Can you imagine? When you find a young man in his 20s, and nobody's ever spoken with him like that. And he said that his father just beat him. Beat him? God in heaven, what? You know what? It seems like people are becoming crueler and crueler. I mean, it's like instead of them doing the natural things to do, which makes sense, you know, to live a decent life, and people are living reckless lives. Like I played the record by Aretha Franklin. I never love a man the way that I love you. I'm trying to create, as a patriarch of men that women would love to be with. I cannot remember one day in the 35 years that my wife was with me that she said to me she was unhappy in being with me. And do you know how many people I've counseled, married people that I've counseled that told me that they hated their spouses? First thing I'm wondering is, why in the hell did you marry him? I ask a man, why did you marry? Listen, do you know how much it costs to raise a child in California? One child? Lucy and I raised two. And we never counted the cost because we bought them their clothes from the Salvation Army. I remember my little girls, they'd have on these nice little sweaters and dresses. I said, Lucy, where did you get that? She said, well, you know, Hazel's at the Salvation Army store on, where was that? Manchester and Vermont. Yes. I think that Salvation Army store is still over there. And there was one of the deaconesses at the church that I pastored worked in the store. And when my daughters were young, Lucy would go there looking for, you know, things to put in the house. We didn't have a lot of money. Guess where we got our bowls and glasses and dishes from? We didn't go to May Company, the Broadway. We didn't go to Saks Fifth Avenue. I see a lot of these millennials, they come all over the internet. They say, look what I got. I paid $500 for a Gucci purse. Number one, can you imagine a man paying $500 for a Gucci purse? That is the most, to me, it is the most ridiculous thing ever. I can't see a woman paying $100 for a Gucci purse. So Lucy and I went shopping at the Salvation Army store. Believe it or not, you can get some good deals. Now, I'll tell you how I know. A person like me dies, and I got a house full of stuff, you just call the Salvation Army truck and have them come and take all the stuff that's here, and all the picture frames, all the lamps, all the refrigerators, everything, and trash my pictures and my thing in it because I'm dead, and take it to that Salvation Army store. And when a young couple is getting started in life, you can take your asses right over there and get you a house full of stuff for your apartment. But no, you know what? You're not going to do that. You're going to want to go to IKEA, aren't you? You're going to want to go to IKEA. You want to go and get something new. You don't want to sit on somebody else's old stuff that they sat on. You don't want to put your food in a bowl that somebody else put their food in. You crazy. That's why. And look here. The very house that, Lord willing, if I live to Saturday, the very house that I'm getting painted. Listen to me, millennials. Listen to me. The very house that I'm getting painted. I moved in it in 1974. And it was only painted one time before that when it was wood framed. And then I got it stuccoed, painted gray, and it hasn't been painted since. And that's been almost 30 years ago or more. And I'm getting it done and I'm 77. And I may not live another 5 years. I may not live another month. Why am I doing it? I'm doing it because I love you people. I'm showing you what this country is about. I'm showing you what life is about. I'm showing you that what you see on TV and what you hear on the radio and what you see on this virtual stuff is foolishness. You know what? I was feeling bad after I took my second shot and my heart hasn't been acting. I don't know who this is calling me. It can't be serious. I'm going to show you. No, It ain't serious because, see, they talking about Philadelphia. I don't even know anybody in Philadelphia. But I want to tell you that the whole of mankind, oh, listen to this. I like this. I like this. This is how God gives me these wisdom points coming up. The whole of mankind and their existence, both male and female, is all contingent upon what the Spirit of God does in the life of that individual as they find themselves yielding to the authoritative mandate of a divine God that has history in the forefront. Let's see who this clown is. Hello.
Hi, this is Jackson, and I'm calling today to discuss with you your options for met.
That's America. That, my options for what? And then they hang up. Because everybody's trying to make money. Everybody's trying to make money. Now, those phone calls used to annoy me. They don't annoy me anymore because it keeps me in tune to the world that I'm living in. Now, let me share something with you. The homeless situation, that can be resolved. Gavin Newsom or whatever his name is, the governor or the mayor or whatever, they can solve it if they want to. But you can solve your own problems. You can solve your own problems by seeking God's will for your life without any outside interference from anyone. He can bring peace in your heart. I was totally bummed out yesterday. And I don't know whether it was a test from God or what. After I spoke with that young man, I said to him while I was speaking with him, God didn't send an angel here in the form of this young man talking to me, because he said, man, I was depressed and ready to give up. And then he said, and after speaking with you, and then Reggie spoke out and said, Pops, I tell you that all the time. Reggie come by here, said it. I come by your house once a week because you do the same thing for me. And he said, you don't even know you giving out that energy. He said, you give out positive energy whenever you talk. And everybody knows. I've had men just want to hold my hand. It's the energy that they're picking up. Age. And that's why I have no respect for young men when you have a sage in front of you talking to you and you do not take advantage of that. I remember my radio producer, Mark Ramsey, told me something once at the radio station that he was working at. One of the white fellas, you know, Mark is a nice guy and kind of a short guy and like a little brother type. His disposition is like that. Mark Ramsey, loving soul. And this white boy at the radio station was trying to father him. And I remember Mark was telling me about it, and then Mark told him, he said, look, I don't need you to father me. I got a dad in Chicago, and if I want to get that kind of love from him, I'll pick it up from him. That's what I want to do. That's why I'm getting my house done like this. Bring the patriarch back. Because the system has done away with maleness. The system has done away with the father figure. You know, so often I hear it always communicated. Well, my mama told me this. My mama told me that. My mama's praying for me. What about your daddy? First thing I asked that young man is, I didn't hear you mention your father. No, I haven't seen him because of this and because of that. And guess what he was getting from me? He was getting fatherly advice. Why was he getting it? Because I loved him. I think he wrote his name down. It don't matter. He's in my heart already. And he's going to call me because he got my number. And he's going to say, you got that place fixed up back there yet? Yep. Can I come by? Yep, you sure can. Come on by. And check it out. PJ's not going to charge no money. No, I'm not. I don't have to be affiliated with no city fathers or no county registration, nothing like that. No, no. You got to be a grown man. You got to be on your own. And you've got to want, okay? You've got to desire advancement in a culture that is falling apart. You've got to desire it. See, summer's coming up, and everybody's talking about these summer events. Oh, this is going to be the summer breakthrough thing. We're going to dance. We're going to party. We're going to do this. No, no. Here in the Hard Courthouse, we're just going to sit down, and we're going to talk about it. A young man called me this morning. He said, I'd like you to tell me some kind of a biblical evidence where I would know that Jesus really existed as a person. I said, you don't need to know that. I said, what you need to know is how to provide a living for yourself from this day forward until the day you die so that you will never be unemployed. You will never be without. He said, do you need some help pulling the weeds in your garden? I said, I'm not coming to get you. You got to come over on the train. Oh, I don't want to get on no train. I don't want to ride no train. I said, but you want to help me, but you want me to come and pick you up. I said, that's not the way a man does it. If you want to help someone accomplish something, show someone that you have enough guts or gumption to get up off your ass and do something yourself. See, that's the patriarchal. I'm not your mama. I'm trying to be your daddy. And I'm trying to tell you that if you live in the city and if you live amongst people, you've got to do, oh, it's dangerous on those trains or buses. Yeah, it sure was. It's dangerous every time I get on an airplane and fly somewhere. And you all know I never did like flying, but I got up and I flew. I bought my own ticket when I was going around the country doing these conferences and things. Didn't no church organization pay for me to do that? I bought my own ticket and I flew. I remember once I was getting on the jet and I said to the pilot, he was there greeting us as we got on. It was the Southwest Airlines. I said, can you tell me one question? He said, I'll try. I said, how in the hell does all this weight stay up in the air? I said, I can understand when you're thrusting on the runway and the wings tilt down and the plane starts. I said, how do you keep all this weight up there? He said, it would take too long for me to explain it to you, but it has to do with the aerodynamics. See, man is a brilliant creature. He can figure out how to keep an airship 40,000 feet going at 4,000 miles an hour. All right. But he can't figure that man is scraping that wall. But he cannot figure how to keep food on the table to feed his wife, to feed his children, to feed himself, and to be satisfied in a one-bedroom apartment until God moves you into something else. I try to tell people I didn't always live in this house. Before I moved in this house, I lived in an apartment. And you should have seen the way I left that apartment when I moved out of it. Clean as a whistle. Went to the apartment complex and tried to get my money for cleaning it because I had to put down a $400 deposit on cleaning the apartment. They didn't give me that money back. But you know what? I was honest. They weren't. That's what I want to teach these young men, how to hang in there when it gets really rough, man. When it gets really rough. when everything you want to do, when you want to stop doing everything because it doesn't look like anything is going to work. Well, I think that's all I'm going to do. We're 50 minutes into this one-hour webcast. I want to thank some of you for the first time coming to my website and listening to what this sage, what this sayer has to say. This isn't a conversation about whether you are liberal or conservative. I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, white, black, Hispanic, Asian. I don't care if you're a male. And listen, it doesn't mean that I have anything against the females, but it takes a female to train another female how to be the right kind of female for a husband. Now, you can go to my website, to my marriage counseling page, and listen to all those lively antidotes that I have where I'm trying to give you some pop quiz advice on how to do that. But outside of doing that, you need a female. If you're a female, you need a female to teach you how to be, now listen to this one, submissive to the husband that God has given you. All right, brothers, you're going to get in trouble now because, see, ladies, I want you ladies to be submissive, submissive to the husband that God gave you. Women do not want to submit to, let alone their husband, to anybody. When I look out there to see women after Lucy died, a couple of years after Lucy died, I said, well, let me honestly look and see if I could find. And there was a nice little, I won't give her name, but we dated. No, I never slept with her because I don't go around sleeping with women like that. No. But I told her, I said, you know, I could fall in love with you, but until you prove to me that you love me, we're not even going to have no sex. She said, what? I said, you heard me. Until you prove to me that you will be submissive to my wishes, and I've already acquiesced to the fact that I was going to be submissive to hers if they're logical and practical. Well, you know that thing broke up. Because she wasn't in no way going to be submissive to me. Matter of fact, she told me, you can sell that little old gray house you have over there and come and move in my big house with me. Mm-hmm. You think I'd marry somebody like that? I wouldn't throw my life away like that. That's what I want to teach these men. I want to teach these men that you have to figure how to exist in this world without being controlled by someone that is not going to submit to a man that is willing to work. You see, my wife only worked because she chose to. She didn't have to. Because I told my wife she didn't have to work, that I would take care of her. But Lucy wanted more than what I could offer her. So I told her, you can go to work if you want to. And she did not have to. She never told me how much she made. When she passed away, she owed about $15,000. I had to pay it off. I didn't mind paying it off. That was my duty to do that. That was my wife. And it took me a number of years, if I ever did pay all them cards off. I'm just letting you guys know that when you get with a woman, you have gotten with that woman. And what she needs to do is to discipline herself and so that she can tell her daughters how to look for the right man and how to be the right kind of young woman. Now, it takes a godly woman to do that. I didn't say no church woman. I did not say a woman that goes to church. I said a godly woman. What is a godly woman? A godly woman is a woman whose frame of reference is righteousness. That's the way I can put it. Living right. A godly woman's not going to walk around with her breasts and her thighs out. A godly woman is not going to be doing the pole dance in front of every Tom, Dick, and Harry she sees. A godly woman is not going to sleep with a man. Wait a minute. Which has proven to her that his life is nothing but a track record of whoredom. See, our young women need to, you millennials need to listen to me. You need to listen to this old man. I'm not dead because you haven't heard enough about the right kind of living as opposed to gutter living. Ah, yes. That's what I would teach men around the fire log when my house is painted, when my vegetables are growing, and we're eating a salad. And I said, isn't that delicious? That lettuce came out of my garden there. Fresh, not off the supermarket shelf, my garden. I prepared the lettuce for you. Now, what are you doing to prepare it? I was talking with a man, and he told me, he said, PJ, it's just like you said. I had all three of my sons set down, and I told them what you told me. And PJ, he said, you should have seen them. All their eyes was open wide, and they were looking at me, and I'd never seen my sons look at me. I said, they loved you. They were loving you, man, because you were giving them life. You don't have to go to church. You don't have to listen to no pastor. You don't have to listen to these pimps. Don't listen to someone that don't give a damn about you. And all they're trying to do is to put you in a monopoly. All right, my time is up. I'm going to have to play one more song. And you know the name of this song. It's sung by the Queen of Soul herself, Aretha Franklin. Respect. God bless you. Thanks for coming to my website. Come back soon.